The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start with the cover story headline on the front page, The Quantum Lead, Sensing Urgency and Opportunity, Big Triangle Tech Giants Jostle to Lead the Quantum Computing Surge. The actual story begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with the second headline, Could the Future of Computing Run Through the Triangle? Triangle Seeks Foothold in World of Quantum Computing, written by Lauren Onosorge. Tucked into a nondescript building at NC State University's Centennial Campus is, at least according to a trio of NC State professors, a glimpse of the future. It's an IBM-fueled hub for quantum computing, the application of supercomputers to do, well, they're not entirely sure. That's like going back to the 1950s and asking Alan Turing, what's a computer going to look like in the year 2000? Says Patrick Dreyer, theoretical physicist and professor of computer science at NC State, referencing the famous British scientist. What they are sure of is the multi-billion-dollar opportunity quantum holds to solve problems in numerous industries, and it's an opportunity the region can't afford to miss. Dreyer, along with Daniel Stansel, professor and head of NC State's Electrical and Computer Engineering Department, and Frank Muller, professor of computer science, are leading the effort at the university. And they're not alone. It's going to bring a lot of jobs, potentially new industries, and billions of dollars, says William Hurley, a.k.a. Whirly, the serial entrepreneur from Austin, Texas, who was behind the book Quantum Computing for Babies. For the Triangle, hub status for quantum computing research and development, with assistance from local universities, could catapult a variety of industries to levels not imagined in the current environment. Today's supercomputers will look like an abacus, scientists say. Companies could create chemical catalysts at a faster rate. The financial services industry could create algorithms of risks and rewards of portfolios quicker with more accuracy. And logistics and supply chain analysis could make highways and airways more efficient. That's why companies would want to relocate and expand in an area with a high concentration of quantum computing companies, consultants, and researchers. And that's why folks at NC State and Duke University believe public and private money is needed to develop the quantum computing ecosystem in the Raleigh-Durham area fast. There's a lot of buzz right now in the air of possible applications for quantum computing, and I think two things are happening, says Kenneth Brown, associate professor of electrical and computer engineering, chemistry, and physics at Duke. It's getting closer to reality, so people want to make sure they can take advantage of it once it comes online. But I think the second thing is companies are realizing how challenging the problem is. Money and goal comes together. According to Deloitte, venture capital investors have invested $147 million into quantum, basically supercomputers that can solve problems in minutes that would take traditional computers years or even decades. The technology has secured $2.2 billion in recent research support from governments around the globe, and analysts predict that could be just the tip of a profitable iceberg. Others are paying attention as well. China is investing more than $10 billion in a new quantum computing campus that could be operating by 2020, according to the South China Morning Post. In the United States, Dreyer says there is no reason the Quantum Valley can't be in the Triangle, thanks to the confluence of projects and dollars the region has seen over the past year. Shortly after IBM picked NC State for its first stateside university quantum computing lab, Duke researchers scored a coveted research project to work on quantum computing hardware, a $15 million seven-university collaboration dubbed the Software-Tailored Architecture for Quantum co-design project. The goal is to demonstrate a quantum advantage of traditional computers within 5 years. It's being led by Duke's Brown. The idea was to get together a group of people who would try to make a device at the scale where you could actually solve problems that are hard to solve with the largest computers available, he says. We think of the problem being a problem of code design in that these initial devices, they are limited in their size and they are limited in the number of operations they can do. Brown's team seeks to change that, and he says success would be a big deal for the Triangle. He says quantum computing is one of the only things Congress agreed on this year when it invested $1.5 billion into quantum computing. I do think our work on this project is helping set up Duke to be a place that can really grow in this area, Brown says. That in turn translates to the rest of the region. He notes the school's history of collaboration with Microsoft and IBM, something that will continue as the technology advances. These companies need more people with some quantum training, Brown says. The talent Duke is creating through its quantum hardware projects could work alongside the workforce coming out of NC State's software-oriented initiatives. We really need to start training students to be these bridges, he says. The demand for talent is growing, says Dennis Kikas, Associate Vice Chancellor at NC State. It's really hard to find the talent that has this background, he says. No one can accuse the triangle of waiting, as universities bulk up their resources to get ready for new pools of federal money coming online in 2019. Private industry is eyeing what's happening in the triangle, and not just IBM. A review of LinkedIn profiles shows Microsoft is stealthily building its quantum computing footprint in the triangle. It's not alone. Several companies from several industries have reached out, Kika says. Brown notes his students often find internships at Microsoft and IBM. And just the other day, he met with someone from a large accounting and consulting firm who just called up, wanted to see what's going on at Duke with quantum, he says. If all goes well, the Duke project could have a prototype in a year, which could leverage even more attention, he says. Education's role. Chirag Dikat, an analyst with research firm Gartner, says there's a space race of sorts between companies such as IBM, Google, and Microsoft to create the technology that will capture the opportunity. These are companies that are investing billions of dollars, he says. And they're trying to solve problems that haven't even been realized yet, Dikat explains. Quantum computing is never going to replace the laptop you're working on, he says. Quantum computing is a very specialized computer that can address problems that currently computers cannot even imagine addressing. It will never be used for web browsing. Instead, it will solve problems that would take laptops generations to solve. There's an entire world to explore in terms of tackling physics problems that are unattainable or unsolvable with a standard computer, NC State's Dreyer says, calling the idea of a quantum computer seductive for a researcher. But it's valuable to the country's future competitiveness, too, he says, using the financial sector as an example. One problem the computers might one day solve deals with the cryptographic encryptions used globally in financial transactions and classified communications. The original people thought the algorithm was unbreakable, Dreyer says. If you take all of the computing power in the world today and try to crack the codes, it will take to the end of life to go about cracking these, Dikat says. But using quantum computers, you can almost instantaneously crack current encryption. At least someday, says Dreyer, that potential has obvious national defense implications, which is why the U.S. wants to stay ahead of the technology. It's a use case driving investments in the technology by companies such as Barclays and J.P. Morgan. The pharma space, too, could drive the technology, particularly relevant as the triangle is home to firms such as GlaxoSmithKline and G1 Therapeutics. Imagine being able to simulate molecules, drugs, essentially any biological phenomena on a quantum accuracy, Dikat says. Unlimited potential. While the quantum computers that exist today can't meet those challenges, NC State's Stansel notes, the industry is growing very quickly. I don't think it's going to be that long, a single digital number of years, before the machines are at the point where some significant problems can be solved. And we'll need the talent that has the background, he says. If you wait until the machines can solve real problems to start learning about it, you'll be significantly behind. The differences between what he's discussing and your laptop can't be understated. The typewriter still had the same keyboard as a laptop, he says. Think of this as a totally different machine. A completely alien keyboard you don't even know how to type letters in. You have to completely relearn it. Kika says that's why what NC State is doing is so important. It's a chicken and egg, right? He says. You need the knowledge workers, but you have to train them, and the technology is still evolving. What better way to get that transfer of knowledge than to do research projects? As a method of training that future workforce, the unit is looking for more problems for its researchers to tackle. We're wanting companies to contact us, and we will pair them up with a PhD student, Mueller says. Stansel sees the talent pool universities are building in the triangle as having more of a draw than just academics. when companies are thinking about locating major facilities here, one of their considerations is, what is the talent pool going to look like, he says. Ensuring that we are leaders in this area and providers of significant talent will help grow the quantum activities in the region. Hurley, whose companies include quantum computing startup StrangeWorks, says quantum computing promises to bring a bigger shift in technology than anything seen over the past few decades, but that the Triangle isn't the only region going after the new sector. Others in the game. Hurley points to places like the Institute of Quantum Computing at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, Canada, as competitors, where research has been ongoing for years. There are a lot of places that have been in quantum for a long time, and they see this as their moment to shine, he says. And the competition is global. Quantum computing will be in countries where the government has strong programs, Hurley says, pointing to China. It will also be in a state or a province that has that support, but is also tied to a key industry. He says it's going to take several components to create the quantum hub of the future, from government support to ties to key industries to universities. Dekat says the key to securing the title will be the talent pool, and that with initiatives like what's happening at NC State and Duke, the Triangle region's a clear contender. The research triangle seems to be a core area where there are synergies happening, he says. Companies such as IBM investing in university programs are proof that they believe it too, he adds. What many of these companies are trying to do is they're trying to invest in early talent, early skill sets, so they can create the quantum valley of tomorrow. He says the triangle has three elements that work in its favor: interest from corporations, well-known research universities, and graduates coming out of those institutions, entering the workforce ready. Hurley predicts aerospace, pharma, energy, and finance as the sectors first in line to take advantage of the new technology. Cities, such as Houston with its strong energy sector and proximity to universities, will have an advantage, he says, but the research-savvy triangle, with its proximity to Duke, NC State, and UNC Chapel Hill, is on the list too. Then you have to have a startup scene that's well-funded, he says. But with all industries touted as disruptors, there are risks. The market is so formative, warns Dekat. Things are so elementary that there are around 100 or 150 people who actually understand the quantum mechanics behind the quantum computers. Not many people even have access to quantum systems. This could very well go the other way. He says what NC State is doing with IBM minimizes its own risk. You're not paying tens of millions of dollars to buy the system. You're accessing the system when you need it, Dekat says. Universities, companies, and regions not exploring quantum face the big risks too, he says. Without a workforce trained in the new technology, you go in blind. When you have access to university students and university resources, then you suddenly do not just have a means of utilizing these systems, you also have access, and that's the key to enabling high-level utilization of these resources, he says. While estimates online for the market range to the billions, Dekat says any numbers are premature, but if technologies line up, he says, this market in the next 10 to 15 years could easily be a multi-billion dollar market. And now we'll read a second front page story in the Triangle Business Journal. Advance Auto to move HQ to Raleigh from Virginia, written by Lauren Onisorge. Advance Auto Parts is moving its headquarters from Roanoke, Virginia to Raleigh, a move that means 435 new jobs over 5 years in the Triangle. Additionally, it's opening a marketing and digital technology center of excellence. According to the NC Department of Commerce, the state competed against Virginia and India for the project. Average wages will be more than $106,000. The news, which includes a $5.4 million investment, marks a major win for the region, which has been lacking in Fortune 500 headquarters since the acquisitions of both Quintiles and The Pantry. At a specially called Economic Investment Committee meeting November 28, officials disclosed details about the $12.5 million incentives offer, including a utility fund infusion for rural projects that helped reel in the company's investment. Other than a JDIG grant of $9.4 million, Raleigh City officials agreed on a $500,000 grant, Wake County pledged $88,000, and the company will get another $370,000 from Capital Area Workforce Development. Internally, the project was known by the codename Project Hawkeye. Advance Auto Parts is already a major player in Raleigh, where local employees, including top executives such as CEO Tom Greco, work out of a cluster of office buildings off East Millbrook Road. The company, which now has 729 employees in the state, entered the scene with its 2014 acquisition of locally based General Parts International. That same year, Advance Auto Parts announced plans to invest $5 million into a 600-job corporate support center in Wake County. Advance Auto Parts is the fourth firm to be the subject of an expansion announcement this month. On November 27, tissue maker Cascade Incorporated became the third, picking Scotland County over Quebec for a tissue manufacturing operation. And lawmakers are pushing to get more similar announcements, having introduced a bill November 27 that would raise the incentives cap from $6,500 per job to $16,000. It will put another carrot out there to say, come to North Carolina, says Senator Jerry Tillman, Republican Moore Randolph. Economic development officials indicate that Raleigh may be in line for another major project in the coming days. And now we turn to the Viewpoint page in the Triangle Business Journal to read the editor's notebook written by Sugata Mukherjee, the editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Raleigh needs more wins like AAP headquarters. When we talked to Advance Auto Parts CEO Tom Greco some 3 years ago, he was very cautious in answering the question about AAP moving its headquarters from Virginia. The question was obvious given the presence of the company's senior leadership in the Triangle. At that time, Greco emphasized that the HQ relocation really was not on the top of his mind. What was eating up his days and nights revolved around the performance of the company, its primary customer target, supply chain logistics, and finding the sweet spot to grow the company organically. His priorities were dead on. AAP was having an identity crisis then. Should the company be more for commercial customers, repair shops, fleets, etc., or should it be more focused on do-it-yourself customers? Should it keep the massive network of stores? Should it try to forge partnerships with other retail giants, such as Walmart, to find a new revenue stream and distribution channel? Greco was busy. He was trying to convince institutional customers and stock analysts that the company is relying heavily on new technologies, streamlining operations, and undergoing structural changes in inventory controls. Not very many people were buying his reasoning. By mid-August of 2017, AAP's stock had dropped below $100 per share from its 2015 high of $175. Things are different today. Greco seems satisfied with where the company is heading, and the stock price now tops $180 per share. Analysts are beginning to believe the restructuring is working. So what better time for Greco and his board to announce they are moving their Fortune 500 firm's corporate headquarters to Raleigh? While we thought this may happen for a while, the announcement could not have come at a better time for the Triangle. Licking its wounds that resulted from Amazon bypassing us for its HQ2 project, and coupled with the extensive wait on Apple making its decision on its East Coast campus, Raleigh needed a win. Greco delivered that. And knowing Greco, one thing is for sure, he will immerse himself in community affairs. He will assist local economic development officials in lassoing in new companies, and he is likely to be an active participant on a couple of nonprofit boards. His phone line is about to go crazy. As I've said before, if we block and tackle well with companies we have here that may have headquarters elsewhere, good things will happen. Our prowess lies in our strength that we have always possessed, our universities, which are churning out the brilliant minds and leaders of tomorrow. Not that many cities of our size can claim that advantage. Now, let me tell you what I heard about Apple. Sorry, I ran out of space. Duke case demonstrates system works. That's the headline on another Viewpoint column, this one written by Gary Jackson, who is an attorney at the Durham-based law offices of James Scott Farron. He has participated in several whistleblower cases in federal and state courts. Americans take it for granted that someone somewhere is cheating the government and therefore taxpayers of an untold fortune. But few understand that our justice system empowers them to thwart this kind of cheating should they happen to cross it. In other words, in David versus Goliath battles that pit a whistleblower against an organizational giant, David comes with an arsenal of weapons built into our legal system. Unfolding now in our backyard is a high-profile battle that illustrates how much can be at stake in whistleblower cases. Duke University just reached a settlement in a lawsuit alleging it hid fraudulent research in its labs from the federal agencies that supply research funding. Duke took in more than $200 million in funding based on the research in question. The case was brought by a former Duke biologist, the whistleblower, under the Federal False Claims Act. The settlement still needs the approval of a judge, which may come on December 7, but the ramifications are already significant. Science, a publication of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, reports the case is being closely watched by universities around the country. And you can bet those same university officials are also taking a look at the way their institutions assure the veracity of their research. Clearly, honest, verified scientific research is in the best interests of we, the people. Fraud, no matter what the arena, is a cancer to relentlessly expose and fight, as countless political candidates routinely tell us. But even the most well-meaning of crusading public officials will largely remain on the sidelines unless some brave soul comes forward with information. Fortunately, our justice system does not require this whistleblower to go it alone. Employees or others who have good reason to suspect an organization is cheating on corporate taxes, abusing government contracts, committing financial fraud against the government, or defrauding the government in pursuit of financial gain can file a qui tam, i.e. whistleblower claim. Whistleblower lawsuits seek to protect the government from those who attempt to defraud it. During the 1980s boom in defense spending, some contractors charged hundreds of dollars for a plane or ship toilet seat, or for a hammer or other tool you could buy at a hardware store for $10. Whistleblowers help stop some of these unlawful practices. Fraud on the government can and has stemmed from virtually every industry, including housing and mortgage lending, education and student loan obligations, U.S. customs, finance, and significantly, healthcare. More than half of whistleblower recovery in 2016 came from the healthcare industry alone. Much of this arose from inflated or false Medicare claims, as well as collusion and kickbacks among doctors, hospitals, and other medical care facilities. BP Oil had to pay the government more than $80 million for filing false claims as a result of the massive spill in the Gulf of Mexico. People choose to blow the whistle on fraud for many reasons. Some come forward because of their principles. They cannot abide cheating. Some worry that various kinds of fraud put innocent people in danger, i.e. residents of nursing homes or of communities with tainted water supplies. Some are motivated by the financial incentives. According to the Taxpayers Against Fraud, or TAF, website, the U.S. Department of Justice recovered more than $4.7 billion in 2016 for civil fraud and false claims cases. Individuals who file whistleblower claims on behalf of the U.S. government may receive compensation anywhere from 15% to 30% of the total recovery in some cases. Whatever the motivation, the FCA offers whistleblowers protection from discrimination, termination, shortened work hours, demotions, an inhospitable work environment, and other possible punishments an employer may consider. In other words, whistleblowers don't have to be superheroes. Rather, they're anyone who witnesses rule breaking and decides to be the person who makes a difference. They can be bank tellers and managers, nurses and medical personnel, mid-level managers like the ones who helped bring down Enron, defense contractor machinists, suppliers, manufacturers and procurement companies, or construction workers. If it's also you, remember, doing the right thing doesn't mean going it alone. Our legal system offers supports for the Davids who do us all well by standing up to the Goliaths. Now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Chapel Hill philanthropist breaks new Hanover record. A wealthy Chapel Hill philanthropist spent big on a waterfront home in Wilmington in what real estate agents are calling a record sales price for new Hanover County. Joan Gillings paid $5 million for a 6,500-square-foot home that sits on Bradley Creek across the intercoastal waterway from Wrightsville Beach, according to county property records. The home, described as a French country waterfront estate, is outfitted with doors and mantles that date to 17th and 18th century Europe. Outside, multiple patios and balconies overlook a private pier that juts into the creek. It's an incredible house, says Sam Crittenden, an agent with Landmark Sotheby's International Realty, who represented the buyer. The attention to detail is just off the charts. It really fit the aesthetic of my client. The price tag was more than any home in the county in at least a decade and perhaps ever, he says. Gillings, previously married to Quintiles founder Dennis Gillings, recently donated $12 million to Playmakers Repertory Company and the Department of Dramatic Art at UNC Chapel Hill. The home, located at 407 Bradley Creek Point Road, was set to auction by Concierge Auctions, but that was called off after Hurricane Florence. Before the auction, it was listed for $5.2 million. The prior owners were Cecil and Joanna Worsley, who belonged to the family behind the Worsley companies that built a network of gas stations and convenience stores throughout the state. NC looks to ramp up pipeline in India. As Indian IT firms such as Infosys and InfoAmerica grow in the Triangle, North Carolina could soon see more investment from the country. Chris Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina, says the state's first foreign direct investment office in India opened in November. The office is focused on luring more inbound investment from the Indian market. It's the agency's fifth overseas FDI office after facilities in South Korea, Japan, China, and Germany. The office is led by Investment Director Rahul Padmanabha, a former lead representative in India for the United States FDI promotion effort, Select USA. He was essentially the go-to for Indian companies interested in learning more about expanding in the U.S. market, Chung says. He says Padmanabha, based in Bangalore, will visit North Carolina in early December. Expectations are high as Indian firms have been increasingly interested in North Carolina. EDPNC also maintains trade offices to promote exports from North Carolina companies. Those offices are in Hong Kong, Canada, the United Kingdom, Mexico, and the United Arab Emirates. Leader of the Pack celebrates UNC win with a cheeseburger. Raleigh's Hillsborough Street has lost some of its old school charm through the years, the bowling alley and Two Guys Pizza in particular, but the Players Retreat remains a popular place for fans of NC State University. So the bar was full again on the night of November 24 after the Wolfpack football team won at UNC Chapel Hill. For the Tar Heels, it was a miserable day and dismal crowd leading to the firing of Coach Larry Fedora and the launching of Mac Brown Part 2. The mood was more festive in Raleigh, and that Saturday night, many NC State fans poured into the Players Retreat, which has hosted Wolfpack fans since 1951. One face in the crowd was NC State Chancellor Randy Woodson, who can afford to celebrate at the city's swankier spots, but loves hanging out at the PR with his wife, Susan. He had a cheeseburger and fries and even posed for a picture with a bright red Santa on the way out. This Ivy League school cashes in as Amazon eyes Washington. Amazon's selection of Washington of a Washington, D.C. suburb has been a boon for Yale University. That's because the Ivy League school held a sizable chunk of J.B.G. Smith property stock. Amazon, as part of its HQ2 decision, is leasing about 500,000 square feet from J.B. Smith and purchasing two development sites from the company. With the stock roaring above $40 per share, Yale unloaded 130,000 shares recently for about $5.2 million, according to U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filings. Yale also cashed in about $1.5 million of the stock in June. Yale still owns more than 5 million shares of J.B.G. Smith stock. That's worth $200 million and would pay a year's tuition for 3,745 Yale undergraduates, or more than half the current student body. Company is gone, but the name lives on in a Raleigh locale. The Licton Corporation, which had developed office buildings in Raleigh, is no more, but the name lives on in a prominent Raleigh location. Licton Plaza is located in front of the Duke Energy Center for the Performing Arts, which made Biz wonder why. Turns out that back in October 1998, the Lictons made a gift to the city in the amount of $400,000. The Performing Arts Center received $250,000 in funding, and another $150,000 went to cover the cost of the fountain. The city council named the space the Licton Plaza in return. Too bad the Joel Lane family didn't buy the naming rights back in the day, right? Coastal Bar faces heat from big names in music industry. Jimmy Buffett sings about easy, living easy, and carefree by the water, but the rights to his music are serious business. And now the Swansboro Yacht Club, a seafood restaurant and bar in Swansboro, faces a federal lawsuit accusing it of holding unauthorized performances of songs such as Margaritaville by Buffett and others. The lengthy plaintiff list starts with Broadcast Music, Inc., a New York firm that licenses public performance rights. The suit asks the court to stop the alleged copyright infringement and asks for damages and legal fees. The restaurant didn't respond to a request for comment. BMI's Jody Thomas says the legal action was a last resort after 100 phone calls and 63 letters. She says BMI's licensing fees start at about $370 and are determined by several factors, including venue size. Now we turn to On Tech, Banking, and Transportation, written by Lauren Onisorge. Channel Advisor partners with South Korean firm to build brand. Morrisville-based Channel Advisor is forming a strategic partnership with a South Korean e-commerce company. The deal with Interpark Holdings Corporation of Seoul is more evidence of the global brand the e-commerce software firm is trying to build, says Scott Berg, an analyst with Needham & Company. Interpark is just another marketplace on the surface, such as Amazon or eBay, he says, but unlike those markets, it's based in South Korea and represents Channel Advisor's first foray into that country. What it does is it continues to highlight the value that Channel Advisor's platform has because it's connecting with every significant marketplace around the world, Berg says. If you're a retailer or a brand, this is a one-stop shop. That's essentially what they're trying to create. Business booms for Raleigh entrepreneur after Shark Tank. Days after Reward Stock CEO John Hayes shook hands with Mark Cuban on November 18's Shark Tank episode, the investment became official with the drop of a securities filing for $320,000. But the attention the Raleigh entrepreneur and his travel rewards startup scored on the show may be more valuable than the dollars. It's been crazy. There are lots of people signing up for the site. For a small team like ours, we've never had this flood of users coming in, says Hayes. I've never met him, but it's nice to say Mark Cuban is in the deal. And we got a couple million dollars worth of TV advertising there, said David Gardner, founder of Carrybase, co-founders Capital, and an early backer of Reward Stock. For Gardner, it's the third investment he shared with Cuban, the owner of the Dallas Mavericks. Validict, the Durham company, offers healthcare companies one mobile health API connection to access data from the best mHealth apps and devices. Undercover Colors, the startup founded at NC State University, initially explored a date rape drug-detecting nail polish, but later adjusted its business plan. Earlier this year, it released its product, a coin-sized disc that, when dipped into a drink, can tell would-be victims if it's been spiked with a date rape drug. And Reward Stock, the app helps travelers save cash through rewards such as credit card points and frequent flyer miles. Banks evaluating proposed capital requirement rules. A decade after the recession, federal banking agencies want to ease the capital requirements for community banks. This month, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation voted to propose a plan that allows most institutions with less than $10 billion in assets to be considered well capitalized as long as they maintain a leverage ratio that's greater than 9%. The proposal places a slate of rules which, for most of the banks, has meant calculating four separate complex ratios. Chris Marinak, an analyst with FIG Partners, says the proposal is a logical step to help banks. These rules allow the local community banks to become larger and more profitable, he says. This is a positive development for the local North Carolina banks as well as the entire banking industry. What bankers are saying. Yes, it is going to be simpler. Yes, it will be easier to calculate. Yes, the community at large will know that banks are healthier. They're stronger with that level of capital. But in my opinion, I just think this is going to drive more consolidation. That's James Sill, CEO of Durham's M&F Bank, a historically black institution with $262 million in assets. We're trying to study now to see exactly how it would affect us. We want to make sure that by moving to a simpler process, it doesn't impact our growth. Ted Whitehurst, CEO of a $439 million asset Providence Bank in Rocky Mount. And finally, it takes a lot of extra sophistication and complexity to do all the risk-based calculations. I think it's going to primarily be for banks less than $1 billion. For them, it's significant. I see it as a real win. And that's from Dana Stonestreet, CEO of Asheville-based Home Trust Bank, which has $3.4 billion in assets. And below that article, in the section called By the Numbers, FDIC crunched the numbers, and here's how 5,044 community banks across the nation fared in Q3. $6.8 billion net income reported by community banks, a 21.6% increase from a year earlier. $1.7 billion net operating revenue increase for the quarter. $112.1 million, the decline in loan loss provisions reported by community banks. And $855.1 million, the increase in non-interest expenses. Emails show frustration at CSX's change in 2017. Public records released by Governor Roy Cooper's office recently show state officials, including legislators, appeared blindsided by reports in 2017 that train giant CSX had changed its strategy, a move that could have jeopardized what was then planned to be a $270 million intermodal terminal in Rocky Mount. At the time, the North Carolina Department of Transportation had already spent more than $4.3 million for preliminary engineering studies and design work. If needed, the state could have exercised its authority to be reimbursed, state officials said, following CSX's strategy disclosure. But with years of lobbying and talking up the project's potential, it was about more than dollars to the staffers lobbying for more information. Legislators were not pleased, email show. And finally, Wake Stone still pushing for new quarry near RDU. When Wake Stone Corporation presented a proposal in 2017 to lease the 105-acre Odd Fellows Tract from Raleigh-Durham International Airport for a quarry, controversy ensued from environmentalists and outdoor enthusiasts who had used the land for years to bike and hike. The RDU Authority Airport Authority Board of Directors then turned down the mining lease and directed RDU CEO Michael Landguth to focus on plans for the new runway. Over the past year, Wake Stone has been trying to revive those discussions. In response, RDU has directed Wake Stone to engage all the stockholders, Landguth says, including the environmentalists. Maybe they can find some mutual ground, he says. Not likely, says Jean Spooner, chairwoman of the Umsted Coalition. When asked if she could envision a compromise scenario that includes a quarry, she says, not on the Oddfellows Tract. But still, Wake Stone recently made a presentation to Wake County on its compromise proposal. The firm is proposing a 35-year, $24 million mining lease, plans to contribute $3.6 million for lease payments for a 150-acre mountain biking center on RDU property. Now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Ben Graham. Tennessee REIT, or REIT, puts prime RTP property under contract. A developer is under contract to buy land and build new apartment complexes at the long-awaited Park Center site in Research Triangle Park. The residential development would total 450 units and target a similar construction timeline as the recently announced retail project slated to take place next door, says Research Triangle Foundation CEO Scott Levitan. Levitan declined to comment on the identity of the buyer, but sources say the firm is MAA, a major developer of apartments across the country. The publicly traded real estate investment trust, or REIT, which owns more than 100,000 apartment units nationwide, didn't immediately respond to a call for comment. The nonprofit owns land within RTP and is responsible for overseeing its development. The organization has been trying to instigate the redevelopment of the Park Center property for years with the goal of creating a new mixed-use area in the heart of the park, where employees at nearby companies would be able to shop, dine, and rent an apartment. In October, RTF announced it had signed a deal with Maryland-based developer Willard Retail to sell 12 acres that would be developed as a 150,000-square-foot retail complex anchored by a grocery store. RTF has described the project as the shopping and dining core of the larger Park Center build-out. The residential development, now under contract, is poised to be the next domino to fall for Park Center, bringing in developers for all of the properties associated with Phase 1 of development. "We're starting to get some momentum, finally," Levitan says. "We're very happy." RTF is working with Durham planners to tweak the master plan governing Park Center. An older iteration of the plan on RTF's website shows two residential projects along NC 54, northwest of Davis Drive. The property is currently home to an abandoned shopping center and a small Wells Fargo branch. Levitan says both the residential development and the retail center are expected to deliver in 2021. The master plan includes the eastern half of Park Center, which totals 43 acres. Projection shows relatively strong 2019 for the Triangle's housing market. News in the housing market has been less than rosy across the country in recent months, as home sales have slowed amid rising mortgage rates. Even in the Triangle, the residential market showed signs of softening in the third quarter. But one analyst is projecting that the Triangle housing market will post a relatively strong year in 2019. A Realtor.com report is forecasting a 2.9% increase in home sales in Raleigh next year, coupled with a 3.9% rise in median home prices. In Durham, sales volume is projected to increase by the same amount, while prices should rise 4.1%. Realtor.com analysts attribute the sunny predictions for Raleigh to the same market fundamentals touted by real estate agents and developers across the region: sustained population and job growth. Job creation is growing at 2 times the national pace, and unemployment is projected to reach 3%, one of the lowest on the East Coast. Javier Vivas, Realtor.com's Director of Economic Research, writes in an email. But the projections aren't necessarily good news for first-time buyers. As median home prices continue to rise, affordability will become more of a problem. The market remains relatively affordable compared to the national standard, but that is expected to shift quickly next year as price gains begin to outpace the U.S. average, Vivas writes. The forecast comes despite local signs of a potential slowdown. Earlier this month, a report released by housing data firm Metro Study showed new home construction was flat in the third quarter, while a separate report by appraiser Stacy Anfinson found that home listings and pending sales declined during that time span. 8 Triangle apartments part of $600 million sale. A pair of real estate giants has partnered on a $600 million acquisition for apartment communities across the Southeast, and the deal prominently features the Triangle's hot multifamily market. Carroll Organization, an Atlanta real estate investment and developer, joined with PGIM Real Estate to purchase 13 multifamily properties, including 8 complexes in the Triangle, totaling nearly 2,900 units. According to a news release, PGIM is the global investment management arm of Prudential Financial Incorporated. The multi-portfolio deal also included a combined 5 complexes in Charleston, South Carolina, and Ponte Vedra, Florida. The acquisition is yet another sign of sustained investor interest in the region's active multifamily market. The seller was Lone Star Funds, a real estate conglomerate that purchased the properties in a major deal in 2014. Developer piecing together land near downtown Raleigh. The developers behind a major redevelopment project south of downtown Raleigh have been mum on the details of their plans, but that hasn't stopped the group from amassing more land for a project that could bring 20-story buildings and more than 1 million square feet of office and retail space to the city's southern gateway. A real estate holding company belonging to Five Horizons has bought less than an acre along South Saunders Street for $1.69 million. The acquisition pushes the company's total holdings on the street to 3.75 acres, more than one-third of the 9 acres needed for the larger development. The triangular slice of land is currently home to auto repair shops and other older buildings that would be scrapped to make way for the new development. Firm buys complex for $12 million, sells for $19 million 15 months later. A Texas investment firm has flipped an apartment community in Garner, increasing the sales price by $7.2 million in just 15 months. The sale made by Artesia Real Estate has become routine for the firm, which has bought multifamily complexes across the triangle in recent years. After pumping money into renovations, the firm turns around and sells the properties not long after for more money. The latest deal is for the Greenbrier complex next to Garner High School. Artesia bought the property last year for $12.4 million. By the end of October, the company closed on a sale of the 1970s-era complex for $19.6 million, a price tag that breaks down to just under $88,000 per unit. Most recently, Artesia followed a similar pattern with the Oaks at Northgate and Leon Court in Durham. The firm acquired the Durham complexes in 2016 for a combined $17.5 million and sold them in March for $27 million. And now we turn to Seth Gulledge's page on healthcare and life sciences. UNC Rex unveils plans for $65 million cancer center. UNC Rex Healthcare hopes that a $65 million cancer center will give the hospital the needed space to consolidate services and keep up with the growing population of patients in the Triangle. On November 28, hospital officials unveiled plans for a four-story, 145-square-foot project that will be located across Blue Ridge Road from the existing campus. The final price tag for the center is not set yet, but hospital officials say it is estimated to be in excess of $65 million. Groundbreaking for the project is scheduled for March, with an intended completion near the end of 2020. The project will be funded through a combination of capital reserves, bond funding, and philanthropic support. The hospital is currently planning a capital campaign to elicit donations from sponsors. Tom Grates, the executive director of UNC Rex Cancer Care, says the necessity for the project is driven by an ever-increasing demand for oncology services and a desire to consolidate existing resources into a more accessible location. "This building is 35 years old. We've been trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear," he says. "We have carved it up, conglomerated, and reused rooms." According to Grates, the department services about 250 patients per day and has increased the patient load by 5,600 in the last fiscal year, about 10% growth. He expects that number to continue growing as the population of the Triangle both increases and ages. Compared to 2014, the 5,600 new patients represented 30% growth. He says the new center will provide opportunity to expand the hospital staff to offer more care to the patient population. Currently, the hospital's oncology care is conducted through its existing center on the campus and in a satellite clinic across the road. "Being in two buildings is just so inefficient," Grate says. "We have five different infusion centers. It's so highly inefficient. This gives the option to consolidate." The new center will be located at the corner of Blue Ridge and Macon Pond Roads at the site of an existing employee parking lot. Hospital officials say new accommodations will be made to replace the spots. Dr. Susan Moore, medical director of hematology oncology at the hospital, says those two spaces are already inundated with patients and they are at the limit of their ability to creatively carve out more space, such as putting cabinets in general hallways. She says moving into a new, larger center gives them the ability to tailor a facility exactly to their needs and desires. Durham's Heat Biologics rakes in another $13.8 million. Heat Biologics has banked an additional $13.8 million in its latest public offering. The Durham-based biopharmaceutical company announced the public offering last week. It estimated the gross proceeds from the offering to come close to $12 million. At close on Monday, that figure realized an additional $1.8 million. The underwritten public offering consisted of 8 million shares of its common stock, together with warrants to purchase 4 million shares of its common stock at a combined price to the public of $1.50. The warrants had an exercise price of $1.65, exercisable upon issuance, and expiring 5 years from the date of the issuance. The underwriter also exercised an overallotment option to purchase an additional 1.2 million shares of common stock and warrants to purchase 600,000 shares of common stock. Alliance Global Partners acted as the book running manager for the offering. CIM Securities acted as a financial advisor to Heat for the offering. The company is developing immunotherapies designed to activate a patient's immune system against cancer-causing against cancer using of CD8+ killer T cells. Earlier this year, he'd announced positive interim data from a phase 2 trial of its candidate, HS110, in combination with Bristol Myers Squibb's anti-PD-1 checkpoint inhibitor, nivolumab, in a non-small cell lung cancer. Following that announcement, the company raised $20.7 million in another public offering. According to a release on the offering, the company plans to use the new capital to fund clinical programs, acquire or invest in other businesses, technologies, or candidates, and for general corporate purposes. Duke scores $1 million donation to study links to cancer. A $1 million donation to Duke University will establish an environmental exposomics laboratory to study environmental links to cancer and other diseases, furthering Duke's capabilities as a research institute. Duke's $1 million gift comes from Michael and Annie Falk, members of the university's Nicholas School of the Environment Board of Visitors. Their daughters, Michaela and Gianna, are both Duke graduates. The school's Board of Trustees, in light of the donation, approved the planned laboratory's name to be dedicated after the couple. Exposomics aims to measure people's cumulative exposures to environmental contaminants over the course of their lives and identify how these combined exposures influence the risk of developing cancer and other diseases. The work at the Exposomics Lab is deeply personal to us, stated Annie Falk. Duke researchers creating artificial nose to replace dogs. An innovation at Duke is close enough that researchers can smell it perhaps better than canines. Duke states that the first steps in building an artificial robot nose that could replace drug and bomb dogs in the coming years. The prototype is made from odor receptors grown from the genes of mice that respond to targeted odors, such as cocaine or explosives. Hirooka Matsunami, a Duke professor and senior author of the project, says the idea of artificial noses has been around for a long time. Currently, many e-noses exist, which use various chemical compounds to detect smells. However, Matsunami says those methods are not nearly as effective as a trained dog. And finally, NCRA launches health plan aiming to help workers. Thousands of restaurants, bars, and hotel workers in North Carolina may now have greater access to health care. Last week, the North Carolina Restaurant and Lodging Association, NCRLA, announced the first association health care plan. The Restaurant and Hospitality Association Benefit Trust will allow hotels, restaurants, bars, and other small hospitality businesses with less than 99 employees to purchase group health coverage. In North Carolina, restaurants, food service, and lodging is a $23.5 billion industry. According to the NCRLA, more than 482,300 people are employed in the food service industry in the state, about 11% of the state's workforce. NCRLA President and CEO Lynn Mingus says by creating cost-saving opportunities traditionally only available to larger companies, it will hopefully create access to health care that may not have existed for hundreds of thousands of employees. Mingus says the association hopes that by increasing the benefits businesses can provide, they can also attract and retain more talent to increase the quality of service. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Restaurants and Retail, written by Dathan Kazuk. Look for these trends to hit the Triangle in the coming year. If you haven't yet jumped on the faux meat bandwagon, 2019 could be the year. San Francisco-based consulting firm AF & Co. has come out with its predictions for the hospitality industry in the year ahead. Here are some of the trends that could be in the works for the Triangle. Bite into a vegan hamburger or some vegan seafood. Plant-based meats are going to land on restaurant menus soon. A new take on tea time with sparkling matcha or mushroom teas and your own tea sommelier. More artisanal donut shops. Seed to table is in as chefs work directly with farmers to grow vegetables that promote flavor. Globally inspired breakfast and brunch menus. Reducing food waste. One company is even making sustainable straws out of pasta. And restaurants hosting more events and fundraisers. Restaurant Trends comes from Katie Burke, a reporter for San Francisco Business Times, a sister publication. Night Market comes to Durham. The Durham Hotel and Vert and Vogue will host its second night market on December 5 at its restaurant and mezzanine from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. The event will feature 25 local retailers and artisans with music from Merge Records. This year's event will raise funds for the nonprofit NC Field, which supports farm worker families in eastern North Carolina who were hit by the hurricanes Florence and Michael. Some of the local merchants include Big Spoon Roasters, Counterculture Coffee, Ikazu Artisan Chocolates, Hamilton Hill Jewelry, Other End of the Leash, Port of Raleigh, Raleigh Denim Workshop, and more. And we'll read as much as we can of this Q&A column. Father-son team up for local wine dinner. Taylor's Wine Shop has been a staple in the local wine world for more than a decade. Located in North Raleigh on Six Forks Road, this gas station also contains some of the most expensive bottles of wine in the area. There you can fill up on unleaded, buy a cup of coffee, and pick up a bottle of Spotswood 2015 Cabernet Sauvignon, $240, or maybe a 2015 Dominus Estate Red, $250. Both wines rated 100 points by wine critic Robert Parker. Taylor's Wine Shop has hosted local wine dinners for the better part of a decade. Taylor Cash, his son Ben, and wine manager Corey Lyler have hosted food and wine pairing since 2005 when they did their first dinner at Margot's Restaurant in North Raleigh. Here, the father and son addressed the growing scene for wine dinners. How did that first wine dinner at Margot's go in 2005? Taylor: I talked to Steve Horowitz, who owns Margot's. Our philosophy was, we'll figure out what their cost was for the dinner, and that's what we'll charge the customer. We'll make our income by selling those wines later that night. The idea was to get people to come who wanted to try higher-end wines and didn't want to buy them until they sampled them. Tell us about your recent wine dinner at Vitrio in Raleigh, which featured California's Bedrock Wine Company and cost $100 per person and attracted over 60 attendees. Taylor: Some of that money goes to cover the wholesale cost of the wine. Then we figure out the wines we want to taste, what we pay for them, divide that up by the number of people coming, and then come up with the price. Do you have any say in the food and wine pairing, or do you leave that to the chef? Taylor: We try not to have too much input because we want the chefs to use their imagination. Most of the chefs like to try the wines themselves, so we usually end up giving them sample bottles. And we'll have to stop there as we run out of time for today's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138.